This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
When you think of immigrant labor, which word comes to mind? Skilled or unskilled?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon in for Steve Chiatakis. A fresh review of census numbers is pointing to a dramatic shift in the skill level of America's immigrant workforce. It shows that among both temporary and permanent immigrants, highly skilled workers now outnumber lower skilled ones. Audrey Singer is a senior fellow with the Brookings Institution and an author of the report. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
This seems to counter popular belief, more skilled immigrants than unskilled?
That's right. It's pretty recent, but the rise of more highly skilled immigrants has happened over the last 5 years or so.
And how and why is this happening?
Well, I mean, we have a changing mix of needs in this country in terms of our industries and the restructuring of the U.S. economy, but we also have large flows of international students coming in, some of who stay. We have temporary worker programs like the H-1B that also bring in highly skilled immigrants.
I wonder how this might play into the economic recovery.
Well, as we will see, the economic recovery is going to be uneven across metropolitan areas, and also the changing nature of work in those places will draw different immigrants over time.
And will this skilled labor help give us that extra push?
Well, if we take advantage of who we have here, we also found in our report that a lot of immigrants are overqualified for their jobs. And it's up to us to support immigrants who are here, whether they're low-skilled or high-skilled or somewhere in between.
Audrey Singer is a senior fellow with the Brookings Institution. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Weekly unemployment claims are only slightly higher than the previous week, up by about 1,000, but that still means they're stuck at a higher-than-comfortable level. Well, if you're looking for French Finance Minister Christine Lagarde today, you can find her on Twitter. She's taking questions a day before the nominations deadline in the race to run the International Monetary Fund. That's the job she wants, and it's one that has traditionally been held by a European. Developing countries say it's time to change tradition, but they may not get their wish this time, as Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
Some emerging countries are backing one of their own, Mexico's central bank governor, Agustin Carstens. But so far, Carstens doesn't have enough support, according to Fred Bergsten at the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
The truth is that the emerging market economies regard each other more as competitors and rivals than as allies in a coalition to oust the nasty Europeans or even Americans.
The top job was reserved for Europeans when the IMF was created after World War II. Mark Weisbrot at the Center for Economic and Policy Research says it's time to change.
It is symbolically rather insulting.
Still, now that European countries like Greece and Portugal are borrowing from the IMF, Europeans say it's not a good time to turn the job over to an outsider. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
After six straight losing sessions, maybe, just maybe, Wall Street is finally on the rebound. The Dow Industrials are turning in some of the most convincing numbers we've seen in quite a while, up 99 points right now, better than 0.75%. The S&P 500 has beefed up by a similar percentage margin. The NASDAQ is 0.25% higher. One bit of good news that may have changed Wall Street's outlook today, exports surged to a record high in April while imports declined, largely from supply disruptions caused by the disaster in Japan.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, providing up to four loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733. by Manta, connecting millions of small business owners with new customers every day on the web at manta.com. And by Indiana University's Kelley School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu.
Heads up, horse racing fans. A field of 12 three-year-olds has just been entered for this Saturday's Belmont Stakes. The two-for-one favorite, a horse named Animal Kingdom. Wherever in the Animal Kingdom do these names come from anyway? That's what Chris Kaltenbach wondered about. He's a writer for the Baltimore Sun, and he's been looking into how these famous horses get their names. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Bob.
There's actually an official process for naming thoroughbreds?
There is. All proposed names have to go through the Jockey Club. About 70% of all names that are submitted are approved, but that leaves about 30% that aren't. You can't have more than 18 letters in a name. You can't name a horse after a racetrack. So, you know, regrettably, you won't have a horse named I Love Pimlico anytime soon. You can't name a horse after a horse that's still alive. You can't name a horse after anybody who has won one of the Triple Crown races. So there are rules. And you have to be tasteful, which is the one, I guess, that people tend to run afoul of sometimes.
Now, is there anything to suggest that how they pick names has any effect on how bettors pick horses?
I don't know if there's been any studies, but you know that anybody who bets the horses is always looking for something, some hint, some lucky charm or whatever. So I suspect that there are people who look at names, and you always hear the legends of, you know, somebody who wins $1 million because they saw a horse named after their grandfather and decided to bet the house on it.
Some of these are not so great when you're a track announcer. For example, Yakka Hikka Mikadola.
Yakka Hikka Mikadola. That's a name that will go down in history primarily because poor Tom Durkin, when he was calling a race, just could not wrap his mouth around that name. Each time he tried to pronounce it, it became worse. And so by the end of the race, he was just Yakka Makka Lika Makka Luka. Yeah, he just didn't even try anymore. So pretty hilarious.
Any rules about this? Is there a future for corporate sponsorship of horse names, maybe like race cars?
I don't know if we have a horse named Valvoline anytime soon. I'm not sure what the Jockey Club's position is on that, but I think they would look down their nose at it.
But Yakka Hikka Mikadola is just fine with them.
Yakka Hikka Mikadola and Flat Fleet Feet.
Easy for you to say. Chris Kaltenbach is a reporter with the Baltimore Sun. He's been looking into how all these horses get their names. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Bob.
By the way, we've pulled up the YouTube video to hear how that notorious racing call for Yakka Hikka Mikadola really sounded. Here's a sample.
And Hikka Makka Rakadakalola, and Homeroom Jester, and the trailer is Dola Rola Rola Rakadaka Molahola.
Couldn't have said it better myself. We've got a link to that clip on our website. If you want to hear it again, that would be marketplace.org. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
In China, one school is trying to revolutionize its curriculum by introducing indie rock.
They just start the rock band. To be perfectly honest with you, I've heard them. They're not very good, but it's something that they love doing.
I'm Tess Vigeland. Out goes memorization, in comes fun. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.